Hey, welcome everyone. Hey, this is Dan Janelle, and I'm delighted that you are here today. We're going to learn 15 mistakes that thought leaders make when writing their books. Now, I like to start with a little funny thing, and when we had our registrations, I always ask people if they have any questions, any burning questions that they have, because I want to be responsive to you. You know, I could talk forever about lots of different things, but if it doesn't interest you, then I'm wasting your time. So I've actually reformatted my presentation to include a number of your questions, and some of you may hear your names, your first names only, of course, when I read some of your questions that point out some of the big mistakes. But the biggest one I got, or the one I had to laugh at, was this one that I got by email. It says, I have already written 10 books and 93 scientific papers. Can you share me something I haven't already experienced? Now, the trouble with email is that you really can't detect tone. But in this one, I detected a tone of condescension, and I know it all, and what could you possibly teach me? And, you know, I could have dashed off a quick response, as we all would like to do, and basically say, well, buddy, but I thought better of it, and I actually didn't respond back to him, and I went to my yoga class, and I thought about this for a second, and I realized that there was something I could teach him, and that is, humility. Sometimes discretion is the better part of valor, or whatever that says. You know, one of my favorite quotes that we used to use when I taught the Dale Carnegie course was that every man is my superior in that I may learn from him. And that's from Ralph Waldo Emerson. And as we all know, anything said by anyone named Waldo has to be listened to. It just has to. It just goes to speak. So some of you know me, some of you don't know about me, so let me do a little bit of introduction here, because, you know, why should that guy listen to me? Well, he's written all those wonderful things. You know, was he Sheldon from the Big Bang Theory? You know, I don't know. Anyway, I've just finished writing my 13th book. It's called Write Your Book in a Flash. It's the paint-by-numbers system for writing the book of your dreams. It's going to be published in the first quarter. Maybe it slides to the second quarter. There's some production issues that are going on there, so it may take a little bit longer. But you can check it out and join our mailing list, so get notified when it does come out, and that's writeyourbookinaflash.com. I've also written thousands of newspaper articles, blogs, and e-zines. I was a newspaper reporter, an award-winning newspaper reporter. I've spoken around the world, yada, yada, yada. But yet, I still learn every day. So instead of being snide to him, here's what I told him instead. Or what I should have told him, but he actually came off my mailing list, so he will never know. But I thought it raised a good question. You know, what can I teach someone? And what can I learn? What am I doing myself to learn every day? Because I don't know it all, and I have written 13 books, which is probably 12 more books than most people on the call. And I have written thousands of newspaper articles and yada, yada, yada. But yet, there are a lot of things I don't know. So here's what I've done in the last 6 to 9 months or so. I'm reading books about how to write fiction. Now, everyone on the call is writing nonfiction. This is, you know, material, careers, HR, relationships, management, finance, personal finance, on and on. You know, that's called nonfiction. But I'm reading fiction. And not just, of course, I'm reading novels all the time, but I'm actually reading books about how to write fiction. So I can see what's going on behind the scenes. It's a totally, totally different view, and I think it's a great idea for everyone. I've also taken a screenwriting class, a six-week class on plot and theme and characters and structure and symbolism and all these other wonderful things that nonfiction authors don't think about. But if you use these techniques, your writing will improve. Your writing will be more interesting. Your readers will be more interested. And you can use these same techniques in your speeches as well. So I think it's a very worthwhile thing to do. I've also started to read movie scripts. And one site that I found that has 100 or more movie scripts in there, you add to it all the time, is called GoIntoTheStory.com. These are free movie scripts, everything from old classics to The Sound of Water, which is nominated for like a zillion Oscars this year. So they have lots of things. They don't have everything, but they have lots of things. So you find a movie that you might have liked, like Up or
Casablanca or Pulp Fiction and read that and say, oh, that's how they did that. And, you know, I think it's really important for any writer today to look at movie scripts, because that's a scene. They're written in scenes. There are about 90 scenes in a movie, and they each last, you know, maybe 20 seconds or 45 seconds, very, 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 very fast. And if you read some novelists like James Patterson, their chapters are 2 pages long, 3 pages long, and, you know, we call them page turners. And they end on a page, it's like, oh, my God, I got to read the next page. I can't put it down. And that's what people expect to read today. So I think if all of our nonfiction authors out there want to learn something new and different, they should pick up a few tips from our fiction writing brethren out there. I have a couple of books I would recommend as well. Michael Haig's Storytelling Made Easy. He's a guy I spoke with. We spoke on the same conference together, and he actually is Will Smith's story editor for movies, so he really knows what he's talking about. Another great book is Creating Character Arcs by K.M. Wyland. I'm a big fan of hers. I read everything that she comes out with. She is just, I read her, and I was like, oh, so that's how it's done. So very, very love her stuff. Another book by Haley Efron, Writing and Selling Your Mystery Novel. Again, it gets into a lot about characterizations and a lot of in-depth things that you don't think about, like conflict and red herrings and turning people in a certain way and having them go down a thought pattern. It's very, very interesting. Also, I'd suggest you pick up a Cliff Notes version of any book that you really liked, and you'll see what you missed. And I've done that with a lot of Shakespeare recently. It's like, oh my gosh, An Old Man in the Sea. It's like, oh, A Tale of Two Cities. Oh, so that's what they were talking about. So it is really, really valuable. The other resource I'll point you to is the Great Courses series. This is an independent company that sells their courses. These are famous professors at famous universities talking about film writing or dialogue or nonfiction writing or fiction writing or anything you can possibly imagine, but they're really expensive. However, here's a trick for you, or call this a hack, a life hack. You go to Audible. You know, Amazon owns Audible, and for like $12 a month, you can listen to anything they have in their portfolio or their library, and it could be, you know, a current bestseller on books on tape, or it could be a good number of these audio courses from the Great Courses series, and I've listened to quite a few at this point. You know, I'll go for a walk, and I'll listen to a 30-minute lecture, and it's time well spent. So those are some great resources for you. So if you are Sheldon from the Big Bang Theory and you are listening and you wonder, like, what can Dan teach me, I think you've just gotten your money's worth. But stick around for the next 50 minutes or so, and you'll learn 16 more wonderful things. So what are the biggest mistakes that people make? Okay, number 16, what is the goal for your book? A lot of people don't have the slightest clue why they're writing a book, or they have misconceptions about what a book will do for them. And I just want to lay out my philosophy here. And, you know, I'm not saying I'm right. I'm just saying this is my philosophy. And I think that the biggest mistakes that authors make before writing the first word is they don't know what the book can realistically do for them. And to me, a book for a thought leader is your big business card. The book is your business builder, and the book is your silent salesperson that always is facing spine out, staring at your prospect for days, months, and years until they finally say, aha, I need someone who can do exactly what that book does. Let me hire him or her. So that's what I really think is so important. Now, the philosophy behind this, and I'm not going to harp on this for a long time, I really do think it's important. So if you are if you don't believe in my philosophy, that's fine. Do your dishes. Come back in about 2 minutes or so, and we'll have other great stuff for you. Now, a lot of people say, oh, I want to sell 10,000 copies. Well, you know, Guy Kawasaki says that most books don't sell more than 500 copies. And unless you constantly promote the hell out of the book, the minute you take your foot off the marketing gas pedal, your book sales will suffer. So, can you sell 10,000 copies? That's really hard. But I want you to do the math here. Which is better, selling 10,000 copies or getting one client? Now, one client could mean $5,000, could mean $10,000. For me, it could mean $15,000. So, I would have to find 600 buyers at $25 per book to make $15,000. And I got to tell you, it's easier to sell one client than 600 buyers. Just think about it. It takes a lot of effort to make that one sale, and you're making $24.95 from that one sale. Now, this isn't just me talking. I actually downloaded some great articles the other day, and I'll read you some excerpts here. This is from Mike Slatkin and the folks behind Bookstat, and they know precisely what's going on, according to this blogger who I'm quoting from. They say that self-published and small press books at low prices dominate sales, and you can sell a lot more books for $3 if you want to reach a lot of people, and that's what's happening. $3, that's what books are going for. In fact, Mark Coker says that the sweet spot for ebooks is between $3.99 and $4.99 per book. So I was being generous here and saying you can get $25 for your book at 600 clients, but at $5 a book, well, you do the math because I can't do that kind of math off the top of my head. And you might be saying, well, that's okay, but I bet a lot of those $3.99 guys are just no-name people who don't have any branding, and why would people spend more than $3 for someone who doesn't have a name brand like me, because I'm famous, right? Well, there's this guy named Stephen King. I'm sure you've heard about him. He only has about 500 bestsellers and movies, and anything he turns out becomes the number one instant bestseller worldwide in 17,000 different languages. Well, the average price of his books on ebook, $11.99. And the paperback version, $12.73. So I was suggesting that you could get $25 for your book, and you'd only have to sell 600 copies to make $15,000. Well, I was being overly generous, as it turns out. So the real point here is that you're writing the book to get a client. Your book helps you get known, makes them know you, like you, and trust you, so you can get a $15,000 client. And some people get $50,000 clients. I know. I met them. So the book is really for you to get a client. And that to me is the number one mistake for a lot of people. Say, I want to be famous. I want to be an Amazon bestseller, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, really, at the end of the day, it's you and your bank account. So grow your bank account. So as we move on, the number one question I get time after time, I wasn't even going to address this because I've addressed this in so many other teleseminars and webinars in the past, but it keeps on coming up. How do I find the time? And, you know, it's like I have to balance a busy life. You know, there are a lot of demands on me in my business, and I have to do things. Well, that's true. I'm not going to deny that. And there are people who have kids and, you know, parents they have to take care of, and, you know, not everyone is in the best of health, and we all have stuff that happens, and that can't be denied. So how do you find the time? Well, I can find the time. If you can find 15 minutes a day, you can write a book. Now, I started writing for 15 minutes a day, every day, around July 1st of last year. I was in this Fringe Festival in San Diego, and a friend of mine, Greg, we challenged each other to write a script every day for a month. And we'd only spend 15 minutes on it. You know, a short little skit, something you might see on Saturday Night Live. And we'd get these writing prompts, and we'd figure out, you know, something funny or interesting or whatever. And we kept it up for 15 minutes a day for 30 days. And I found it so much fun. It was a highlight of my day that I started doing it for another 30 days and another 30 days and another 30 days. And before I knew it, I had about 99 really funny scripts. You know, a couple of them were duds. A couple of them were like laugh out loud, hysterical, things I was really, really proud of. And if any of you are interested, I just might share them with you if you send me an email. But then I got this other prompt, and I said, you know, this is interesting. And it became more than just a one-day prompt. It became a movie script. So in 90 days, I wrote 90 scenes in a movie, and now I have a first draft for a movie, all on 15 minutes a day, every day. No exceptions, no sick days, no kids are sick days, no I have a job excuses. Because here's the bottom line. If you want to write, you'll write. And if you don't want to write, you won't. So don't kid yourself. You know, I attended a seminar with Marshall Goldsmith last year, and he has a spreadsheet. He says, here are all the things I want to do every day. And there are a number of things. And he has an assistant who calls him up at the end of every day and says, did you do X? Did you do Y? And he says, yes, 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 or no, yes, no, yes, no, whatever. And they keep a running tab. Well, I thought that was pretty smart, and I'm sort of a spreadsheet kind of guy. So I started putting in things like yoga and Orange Theory Fitness and walking 8,000 steps and playing my guitar for 15 minutes and studying a foreign language for 15 minutes and writing a script for 15 minutes. And I started tracking those things. And I'm proud to say that I wrote a script every day for, you know, literally 6 months. My yoga, I'm doing about 15 yoga classes a month, and which is my goal. I'm doing about 8 to 10 Orange Theory Fitness classes a month, which, again, is my goal. So I'm right on track there. But I noticed something. My guitar playing, I can't find 15 minutes to play the guitar. Then you know what? I'm really not serious about playing the guitar. It's just that simple. If you can't find 15 minutes a day to do something that you want to do, then you really don't want to do it, which brings up a phrase or a quote that one of my good friends told me that's so true. Christian Michelson said, "I have all the time in the world to do what truly matters to me." And it's true, because if you're doing it, then it truly matters to you. You may think there's something more important to do, but if you don't do it, then you know it isn't truly important to you. So just be honest with yourself. If you want to write a book, you're going to write that book. It only takes 15 minutes a day. It may take you 6 months. It may take you a year. It may take you a year and a half, but you'll get it done. If you can't find 15 minutes, you're not going to get it done. So here's the next item. People are unfocused. And again, several people ask this question. I don't know what to write about, or I don't know where to start, or I have so much to write about, I can't focus. Well, you need to narrow it down. It's an absolute must. You know, you aren't the expert on everything. And furthermore, no one wants to read about everything. They want you to solve their problem. And I think that's how you can get focused right away. They want you to solve their problem. So you need to identify their problem. And if you can't solve their problem, they'll buy someone else's book and they'll hire that person to solve their problem at a $50,000 consulting arrangement or a $5,000 or $10,000 or $15,000 speech. So think about it. What keeps your prospects up at night? And then write a book about it. So your goal is to simply give them 10 chapters and 20,000 words that solves their problem. So 10 chapters, 20,000 words, that's 2,000 words per chapter. Again, that's 15 minutes every day. You can write 2,000 words in no time at all. That's all the book has to be. Don't make it more difficult than it needs to be. Writing a book is actually pretty easy. So the goal of the book is to get people to know, like, and trust you so they want to work with you. I met with I would call him a client. He's sort of a coffee buddy. And we met for coffee, and he said, you know, Dan, I have so many things. I want to make the income like you do, you know, let these books, you know, sell for me and all that good stuff. You know, what can I do? And I'm an expert on running, and I have this runner's log book, and I can get sponsors for the runner's log book, and they'll put them in goodie bags at marathons and whatever. And said, okay, that's an interesting idea. And he said, I have this other idea for having a tips book about something. I said, oh, that's okay, too. And I said, what do you do in real life? He said, well, I do customer service training for car dealers so they can, and like my mind went off. It's like, oh, my God, how many people are doing customer service training for car dealers? Like no one. Everyone's doing sales training for car dealers, but actually creating an environment where people feel comfortable and want to walk in and have a good experience, very, very few people. Why aren't you writing a book about that? And like light bulbs go off and you're like, da-da. So you may be sitting on a $1 million gold mine and not even realize it because you're too close to it. And if that's the case, you should really hire a coach or a consultant like me to come in and do an analysis of what you're doing and say, oh my God, the answer is right in front of her face. Doesn't she see it? Because sometimes the answer is right in front of my face and I don't see it. And someone will say to me, Dan, you know, don't you realize that you just said what you should be doing? It's like, oh, yeah. So we all need a coach who can help us get focused. Okay, next slide. Number 13, distractions. Clifford asks, I get distracted by continually looking for more details about various parts of the topic. Well, you know, I admire people like that because I'm like that too. We're very creative people. We're very curious people. And that's a good thing because people who write books love to do research. They love exploring. They love finding new things. It's fun to go down the rabbit hole and explore, and it's never been easier because Google will show you an endless string of results that will take you, before you know it,
4 hours are wasted. You know, we talked about 15 minutes. You just wasted 4 hours going down this rabbit hole. But you need to stick to your time frame, and you need to stick to your outline, rather. And if you look too far afield, then, you know, frankly, make a note of it, bookmark it, and come back and read it after your book is done. So in other words, if you're saying, like, gee, when did General Sherman march through Atlanta? Was it 1864 or 1865? Go to Google, find out, mark the note, but say, oh, gee, General Sherman had dogs with him. I wonder what kind of dogs they were. No, move it to the next. You know, you don't need to know it now. Okay. The other question I'm getting a lot is, Joanne asks, you know, how much research to do on what other people have written on my topic? And this is a very interesting question, because we don't want to be victims of the copycat syndrome. Now, on the one hand, you need to know what's out there so you don't duplicate current material, because who needs another book that says the same thing, right? But you want to make sure you don't intentionally steal, intentionally or unintentionally, other people's materials. So you really do need to watch out for things. And I can't tell you how many people who sign up for my PR lead service and have sent me copies of their books, and they are quoting Zig Ziglar and Brian Tracy and Dale Carnegie without attribution. You know, it's as if they thought they made up the quote, you can get anything you want if you give people what they want. Well, duh. And they may not even know that Zig Ziglar made that up, because Zig's been dead for a couple of years now, and maybe they're a little bit younger and different generations. Who knows? I use a program called Grammarly that will basically check punctuation and spelling. It saves my butt every day, especially with emails. I strongly suggest you get the free email version, or invest $100 and get the one that will check your documents. And it actually has a plagiarism mode in there too, and it will tell you if you've actually stolen someone else's material, and just goes out on the web and immediately finds things like every man is my superior, and that I may learn from him. It's like, cool. I didn't make it up. Ralph Waldo Emerson did. So that's how you can find if you've actually unconsciously stolen someone else's work, and it's very, very good. So there are some people, just to be totally honest here or above board, there are some people who don't do any competitive research or any competitive literature because they're afraid of unintentionally stealing other people's ideas, and I admire that. And I don't have a good answer for you here. I don't know which way is better, but you'd really need to make sure you're not plagiarizing someone. So if you don't do any competitive research, run through the plagiarism filters. If you do competitive research, make sure you take very, very good notes so you don't accidentally appropriate someone else's material, because frankly, it's very easy to forget, because if you read something 15 times, you start to think it's yours. So that's human nature. So just be very careful about that. Okay, number 11, overwhelm. Here's my, Rusty and John both asked the same question, you know, how not to be overwhelmed with the huge task ahead of you, all that writing. Well, if you follow this format, you won't waste hours going down the wrong path of writing too much or not knowing writing what to write about. And that's a two-step process here. Number one, write the back cover copy for the book. And this is only 400 words, so again, this is something you do in just a very, very short period of time. You're basically answering four key questions. Who is the book for? How will they benefit? Why is knowing this material important for them? And why are you the best person to write this book? If you can answer those four questions, you can have an intelligent conversation with anyone about the book, and you'll be totally focused, because you'll know that this book is for, you know, medical patients as opposed to medical doctors. You know, big difference. And how will it benefit them? You know, you can figure that out as well. But, you know, there's a difference between lightning and lightning bugs. As Mark Twain said, I believe in quoting people, so use the right word, use the right focus, and then you'll know where the book is supposed to be going. And then, of course, the next step, which I go into in great detail in my book, Write Your Book in a Flash, is to write the outline for 10 chapters. And the first chapter is an overview. The last chapter is your call to action summary. And the middle chapters tell your story and make your case and prove your point, point by point by point. We'll go into this in a little bit more detail in a few minutes. And if you do that, you will write your book fast, because as I say in this little quotable here, outlining your book will save you hundreds of hours of work. It certainly will. Okay, next slide. big mistake is that you are the superhero. You know, you say, I solve this problem, and I am wonderful, and I am great, and I do this, and I do that. Now, people tune out. You have to make your clients the heroes of your stories. So it's okay for you to be a hero here and there. It's certainly okay for you to be the hero that steps in and solves the problem, but you want your you can't come across as the know-it-all, because people hate know-it-alls. Now, you can do this very, very subtly. You can say, as I told one of my consulting clients one day when he hired me to figure out how to do X, Y, and Z, you know, it comes across very natural. Don't do it a lot, but you do it here and there, sprinkle it here and there, then people know that you offer those services. Because believe me, if you don't tell them you offer those services, they will not be smart enough to think that you offer those services. This it just is. So I also believe that you should use the back of your book to tell them how to buy your services. So you can have ad pages in the back of your book or one sheet, and they have a call to action. They can be order forms. You can tell people to go to your website, and you can certainly have free reports or create anything that is digitally delivered to them, so they have to exchange their email address in order to receive your digital freebie. And that way you build a mailing list and you build a relationship with those people. This is the time-honored way of building your empire, frankly. So very, very simple processes there. And a lot of people who are writing their own books and self-publishing are not taking advantage of these pages to basically sell their services, which is a real, real, real shame. Okay, the number ninth biggest mistake are copy editors. I've worked with a number of copy editors, both in self-publishing and working with publishers, and certainly back in my John Wiley days when they had, you know, highfalutin copy editors, and the story is the same going back 20 years. You send your manuscript to one copy editor, and they change the number 9 to the spelled out word nine, N-I-N-E. And say, okay, that's their style. And then you send it back to a second copy editor for a second set of copy editing, because no one can find all the errors. And you know what they do? They take that and they change it back to the original. And it's like maddening, absolutely maddening. So number one, you must be on the same wavelength as your copy editor. And as I say in the quotable, make sure your copy editor understands your style. You know, do you use the Chicago Manual style? Do you have any special ideas of things that the way you want things done? Because, for example, you might want all your numbers spelled out. Or you might want your numbers looking like numbers that came off of the calculator. There's a big kerfuffle about commas in a series. The AP style, that's the Associated Press style, says thing one, comma, thing two, comma, and thing three. Actually, there's no comma. Let me correct that. Thing one, comma, thing two, no comma, thing three. Well, then there's the Oxford comma that has commas after each of those things. Thing one, comma, thing two, comma, and thing three, comma, period. So the reason is that in the first way, it's very confusing because the two final things could be linked together. And there's actually a famous court case quite recently where a contract did not have that second comma in there, and everyone took that to mean that these other two conditions must be met, otherwise the contract was invalid. And it's like, cost the company millions and millions of dollars. So anyway, the point is, you need to decide which way you want, because you don't want to have 9 of them doing one way and the 10th one doing the other way, because it just drives people crazy. The other faux pas that I see is capitalization in titles. Technically, again, the Associated Press newspaper style, that you do not capitalize words like a and the and about, you know, prepositions and conjunctions and articles. The is an article, unless they happen to be at the very first of a sentence. Now, the internet is really changing that a lot, and the internet is basically saying capitalize the first letter in every word. And I'm not one to fight against a tidal wave. I'm just one person here, so whatever you decide to do, just make sure that your copy editor understands your style. And then you won't go back and forth and have countless corrections where no correction needs to be done. Okay. On the next slide, here's another big mistake that people make. They write and edit simultaneously. No,
Those are two different modalities. They use different parts of your brain. They use different skills, and you'll waste a lot of time if you try to edit as you write. Just do one, then the other. No trouble. Here's another problem. People only proofread what they see on the computer screen. Wrong. Your eye will play tricks on you. Your eyes and your mind expect things to be there, and even if not, they're not there, they will think they are there, and that's why you need a copy editor. So I suggest you copy edit your material several times. Once it's on the computer, then you print it out and copy edit it again, and then you listen to voice to text, which is available on just about every computer now, and you can hear people, you'll hear the voice, and you say, wait a second, there should have been a V in there. Or I said the same thing twice in two sentences. It just uses different parts of your brain, and it will wake you up to all the errors that are there. And no matter how many people you show the manuscript to, they will always find another typo. So it just happens. It's just the way it is. Number seven, writing a book is easier than you think. I'm sure a lot of people are saying, are you crazy? I can't find 15 minutes a day to write the book. How does he think writing a book is easier than you think? Well, frankly, you don't have to start from scratch. That's the secret. You know, you can use your blogs, your articles, your speeches, your PowerPoints, your podcasts, your tips. Anything you've written can be reused. And it should be reused if it fits into that outline and that format that we talked about. So look at your material and say, what I've already done, that I don't have to do it again. You may have to rewrite it for style, or you may want to expand it, of course. That goes without saying. But you don't have to start from scratch. In fact, those blog ideas may give you other ideas that spark other ideas that you now can think of because you're in a different time frame. On the next slide, you can see that your first draft is not your final manuscript. This is a message to me, frankly. I thought that I was the world's greatest writer. After all, I'd written 13 books and then thousands of newspaper articles, and those were under deadline, and they were good enough to be printed, so first drafts were good enough for me. Well, I wrote the first draft of Write Your Book in a Flash, and I put it aside for a month, as you should do. You know, look at it with fresh eyes. And I realized that the first draft sucked. It was really bad. There were things that just did not make sense when I reread it. And this is par for the course. Most first drafts stink. So you need to put it aside for a few days or a few weeks so you can clear your mind out and look at it with a fresh set of eyes and then read it again and edit it and do what needs to be done. After that, then you can ask beta readers for feedback. Do not ask beta readers for feedback before you've done this set because they will look at it and say, I thought Dan was smart, but he's really a blithering idiot. This sentence makes no sense. In fact, this sentence isn't even a sentence. So keep your head high and review your first drafts. Now, another question I get a lot is, but if I give out my best ideas, everyone will steal it. And no, that's just not the way it works. You know, don't hold back your best ideas because no one can express your ideas as well as you can. I've had people say, well, my competitors will steal my intellectual property. Well, you know, they already have. I hate to say it, but if there's an inkling of anything on your website, they've seen it and reproduced it and made it their own and whatever. Because if you don't tell your customers about it, then you don't stand out. So you need to express those ideas so you are unique and you give value to people. Other people think like, gee, my publisher will steal my idea. It's like, no, publishers don't have writers on staff. They have copy editors and a lot of freelancers and acquisition editors, but they don't have writers on staff. They don't have people who have your set of experiences and background and knowledge to be able to write a book like you can write and the resources to do it. You know, resources meaning people you can interview, you're seeing in the community, you can open doors to interview famous people and people in your industry. So they're not going to steal your idea because they can't possibly produce it. So if you don't give people your best material, they won't know that you are any different than anyone else. And, you know, let's be honest. We all stand on the shoulders of giants. Every one of us who has a great idea, it probably started as the germ of an idea from someone else, and we built on it and made it our own. And if that person came back and looked at your version of their idea, they'd probably say, you know, he stole 90% of it. You might polish up a little bit here and there, but, you know, that's really my idea. And you'd be hard-pressed to defend it because every idea starts from some other idea. Just to be totally, blatantly honest and obvious about this, I've had some great ideas, and then I realized that, ooh, this is really derivative from this. And I've had other people, frankly, steal my work and think it was theirs because everyone had quoted it so often. And it was just like, you know, it just comes with the territory. And all I can say is think of better ideas. So keep on moving the ball forward, and we'll all make the world a better place. Which brings us to number four. It takes a village to create a book. Now, here's the funny thing. Authors don't write books. What? Are you kidding me? I wrote a book. No, you wrote a manuscript. Teams turn that manuscript into books because you need a copy editor. You need a proofreader. You need an internal layout person. You need a cover designer. You need distributors. You need on marketers, on and on and on. It takes a village to publish a book. And frankly, here's another mistake that a lot of people make. It takes a lot of money to write a book. So you may say, well, I have my publisher, and he took care of everything. Well, that's right. Do you wonder how much it costs a publisher to publish a book? Well, it's about $25,000. Those copy editors and proofreaders and layout people and cover designers and distributors, if you plan on self-publishing, plan on spending some money. I'm reading in this week's newsletter from Henry DeVries, the CEO and acquisitions editor of Indie Books International. He says that it takes about $25,000 necessary to write, publish, and promote a book. And, you know, where are you going to get that money from? So, you know, think about that. You know, you might get sponsors. That's fine. Someone wrote a question, though. Can I start a Kickstarter campaign to fund my book? Apparently, a lot of people are starting to do that. We'll talk about that during the Q&A if we have time. But again, you need to start thinking about the money for this. Where is it going to come from? How much is your budget? What can you spend? What can you do yourself? What can you do on the cheap? What can you do on Fiverr? And what can you not skimp on? Do not skimp on copy editing, by the way. You want a professional copy editor, because if your book has a zillion typos, people will forget one typo, I guess. Some people won't forget one typo, but if you have a zillion typos, you're going to get slammed. You just will. Okay, so think about your budget for all of this. And I am not one to say, oh, borrow money against your IRA or take out a second mortgage on your house. Don't do it. Yes, I believe in investing in yourself. Yes, I believe in you and that the book can help you and get you those bigger clients and make you stand out and let you charge a professional fee. I totally believe that, but I don't believe in going to Las Vegas and putting it all on red and spinning the dial. So be very careful about your money. Okay. The worst time to write a book. Okay. The worst time to write a book is when you have more clients than you can handle. You don't need to write a book if you're already a brand name person. And you don't need a book if you don't need any passive income. And I'm not sure that there's anyone on this call who qualifies for that. So if you are too busy and can't possibly handle anything else and you're making too much money and the money just rolling in, then you probably aren't on this phone call. You know, this is just reality. Everyone needs a book. Now, do you need two or three or four books? Do you need to write a book every year? Well, Alan Weiss believes that you should write a book every year, and I think there's something to be said for that because it shows that you are growing. It adds to your credibility. It makes you that much more valuable. And I know people who raise their rates every time they publish another book. So, you know, there's a reason to do that. So those are things to think about. So other mistakes I've seen as I'm working with some of my clients, you know, sometimes they write stories and the lesson that they're trying to prove in their story doesn't match what they thought they were saying. And that's a case where a developmental editor like me or a book coach like me can come in and say, you know, this story doesn't quite work. It's a great story, but it doesn't prove your moral. So either change the moral or change or find a new story. And that's because we're too close to our material. So it is really good to have a person who can come in and look at your work with a fresh perspective and give you outside feedback and comments in a very constructive way that makes the work better. In my little quotable here, I say that writing a book without a book coach to guide you is like riding a bicycle without wheels. And it's true. You know, in fact, I wrote my book without a developmental editor, and frankly, in retrospect, I wish I had one, because when I read through the book, I didn't mention ebooks at all. Like, how could I not mention ebooks? This is brain dead stupid. Ebooks are a big part of the publishing industry, but I'm so book centered, hard copy focused, I didn't even mention ebooks once. And I'm sure a good developmental editor would have said, Dan, what about ebooks? Are you going to cover ebooks in this? And I would say, oh yeah, ebooks. Yeah. Forgot to do that. Yeah. Here's another example. One of my clients wrote a script to show how not to do a process. You know, here's the world's worst scenario. Here's how managers clearly communicate incorrectly to their people. And it was laughable fun. It was really, really great. It was a great script. But you know what would have made it better? Showing the person or showing the reader how the conversation should have gone. And my client said, oh, yeah, that's really good. Let me work on that. So, again, another person coming in and saying, you know, here's what would make it even better. So it's someone polishing things up, someone making it better. And that's what I do when I work with my clients. Another one of my clients had too much scientific background. He was talking about flow, you know, that state where that optimal state of performance where time just flies because we're doing what we're supposed to be doing. Well, frankly, that's all you need to know about flow. You don't need to know a page and a half about the scientific background and why your body and why the hormones do certain things and who invented it and how it was tested and blah, blah, blah. It's just like put me to sleep. And when we're dealing with a book that can only have 20,000 to 25,000 words, you have to know where to cut. And that was one of those things that could have been cut quite easily. Another one of my clients was really good on, here's what you should do, but that makes for a boring book. So I said, you need to have more stories, you know. Then he said, well, I'm a rotten storyteller. And I said, well, let's see if you are or not. You know, and I said, can you think of a time when? And he thought of a time when, and he wrote a wonderful 6-page piece that turned out to be the introduction of the book. It was that good. And he just didn't think he could do it. Well, number one, he didn't know that it was needed. And number two, he didn't think he could do it. And as a book coach, I showed him that it was needed and that he could do it. And the book was better for it, and he thanked me profusely. So that was really, really cool. So the number one mistake you have, frankly, is working alone, because it takes a team to write a book. You know, you really do need someone to help you. Otherwise, you're going to be on that proverbial bicycle and you'll be falling off because it doesn't have any wheels. Now, you don't have to do it yourself. There are a number of benefits of working with a book coach, and you know, Ken Blanchard, who wrote maybe 60 bestsellers from The 1 Minute Manager to Who Moved My Cheese and a lot of other books in between. You know, we spoke at a conference and he told me that he actually learns from his co-authors. So there's no disgrace in working with a co-author. And frankly, the biggest lie among speakers is that I wrote my book myself. You know, they all hire ghostwriters. Well, maybe not all of them, but a lot of them who are like super busy, they've hired ghostwriters. And the benefit of working with a ghostwriter or a book, a coach or a developmental editor is that they can give you guidance and feedback. Some of my clients just want me for accountability. They want me to kick them in their butt and say, you know, have you got this done? No, you promised me this by next Thursday, you know. And some people are leading really busy lives, and they just need to know that, if I don't turn this manuscript in to Dan by next Thursday, he's going to kick my butt. And that will get people to stay up all of Wednesday night and do what they're supposed to be doing. A good coach can also probably provide you with contacts and referrals, which is always cool. You know, they can open up their Rolodex to you and make introductions that you would not have. And that saves you time and money, which is extremely valuable. So should we work together? Well, I've written 13 books, including 8 books for Wiley. I'm an award-winning daily newspaper reporter. I'm a former business newspaper editor. I have degrees in journalism from Northwestern University. I've interviewed President Gerald Ford and First Lady Barbara Bush. And I've written thousands of newspaper articles and blogs. So I think I have some credentials that may impress you, and if they do, then we should set up a conversation and talk, and I'll give you a link to that in a minute. Actually, I'm going to read that link here for you. You can schedule a free 20-minute appointment with me. No obligation at all. We'll just chat, because frankly, I learn every time I talk to someone, so I'm going to be getting something out of this too. And just look at a point on my calendar, and you'll see this link, and we'll send it to you in email. But it's called writeyourbookinaflash.com/coaching. writeyourbookinaflash.com/coaching. And we could talk about book coaching, developmental editing, ghostwriting, anything you want. And I think we'll have a lot of fun. So let's go to your questions. We have about 15 minutes left, and we'll see how far we can get. Okay. Okay. Questions. You know, how do you find an agent? Well, there are different kinds of agents for different kinds of books. There is a book out there called Literary Digest or Literary Guide or How to Find an Agent. Go to Amazon, type any of those words. You'll find a list of agencies and what they're looking for, whether it be fiction or books or medical books or whatever, and you'll find the name of the agent who is in charge of that section and their contact information, what they're looking for. So very, very valuable. You know, spend $20, buy a book. Number two, how to find a copy editor. Well, ask your friends who've written books, ask for recommendations. That's probably always a good rule of thumb. And check out those recommendations, because frankly, one of my clients wrote a book about financial planning, and she sent it to him. She's actually my financial planner. And it was an okay-looking book. And I said, you know, congratulations on your book. And she said, you know, thanks, but I'm really not that happy with it. I said, really, why not? I said, well, what do you think about the layout? I said, well, it looks okay. I said, well, they really didn't know what they were doing. And it was like pulling teeth back and forth. And they weren't using the current word processors, and they weren't doing this. And that came from a recommendation. So be sure that the person who's recommending the service actually used their service. Not that, oh, I met someone at the Exchange Club or the Rotary Club, and she seemed to think she knew what she was doing, and I have her card here. No. Do a little bit of research. See what they've done. Ask for a sample. You know, they should not be offended if you do that. Okay. Number three, if you have a personal story and expertise, should those be split up into two books or a series or combined that may be expounded upon with more? Wow. Good question. It depends what your ultimate goal really is. You know, if you're writing fiction and you want to have a series and you want to be the next Hunger Games author or the next Harry Potter author with 7 or 8 books and movies and whatever, yeah, you know, there are books out there that will teach you how to write a series of books for fiction. And I cannot get into that now because I don't know the answer, but that book probably does. The Writer's Digest Company has a number of books that talk about the nitty-gritty of book writing for many different genres. I've read a couple of them. In fact, that mystery writing book was from Writer's Digest. It's excellent. It's absolutely excellent. So check out any book by Writer's Digest, and you can probably find good information on how to write material. You may have two books here. You know, one is a personal story that may be your memoir, and that's fine. Then you may have another book in you that is really like, here are the 10 rules for success in fill-in-the-blank field. So those probably should be two different books, although you might say, you know, here are 10 important lessons to learn, and here are anecdotes from my life that illustrate those points. And again, it depends what you're looking for. Are you looking to change the world? Are you looking to get a new client? Are you looking to, you know, you figure that out, and I think the format will take it from there. Number four. Is there a writing tool to record words into text or for dictation help? Look at your iPhone. And if you don't have a newer iPhone, then get a new iPhone. Because I've been dictating emails into my iPhone, and it is darn near perfect. This is great news because I wrote one of the first books about voice recognition systems back in 1999, and it was really difficult back then. Those systems were not good at all. But here it is, you know, nearly two decades later, and these things are nearly perfect. So look at your iPhone, look at your Mac. There are tools there that you can use for dictation and transcription. Number five, is it true it's now better to market and pitch and sell the book first so as to stay flexible as to what the market or publisher actually wants rather than write it and then try to pitch the market? Wow. That's a good question. Here's the deal. There are publishers who say, we want to work closely with you so we can put our knowledge together and create a stronger book. And there are other publishers who say, I don't have time for that nonsense. You're the expert. Give me a finished book. I don't want to have to change a word because I have too many other things to think about. So that's the market. Another one of my clients wrote a similar question like this and says, you know, should I send my finished book to the publisher? It's like, no, they want to see a business plan. But a business plan for a book is called a proposal. But it's really a business plan. And there are, if you type, how can I write a book proposal, you'll find a number of good, simple lessons online. It's a very long document. It really tells the publisher who the book is for, what they're going to learn, why you're the best person to write it, the other books in the field, how yours is different. It might include a sample chapter. It would include an outline and table of contents and some testimonials and some information about you and good stuff like that. That's what you should be working on. It also includes your marketing plan. And frankly, even if you are self-publishing, you should write that kind of proposal so you are very clear on how you're going to market the book itself. So I hope that answers the question. Number six, is it better to start writing or validate the market acceptance of a book before beginning, a la Kickstarter? Great question. I think it's very important to do market research before you write your book, and you can do that through your mailing list. You can do that through Facebook or Instagram and just a number of other ways to see if people are actually interested in that topic. You could use Google to see how many people are searching for that topic. You could go to Amazon and see how many books are sold on that topic. So, I think that's very valuable. As far as Kickstarter goes, this is fascinating. I'm going to have to do more research about this myself because more and more people are coming up to me and saying, I want to do a Kickstarter campaign to fund the creation of my book. I thought, that's pretty interesting. So they have to do a whole lot of marketing to get the $10,000 or $25,000 to do their book. And that's a lot of work. And then you have to do work to sell your book. It's interesting. If you can find people who are going to donate $25,000 to you to write a book, more power to you. I'm going to explore that. I think that's fascinating. If that's a trend that actually is happening and is successfully happening, then I need to know more about it, and I'll report back to you. Number seven, indie publish or look for a publisher? Well, that's a question that we could spend 2 hours answering on, and we only have about 7 minutes left. And I'm going to answer it in 30 seconds. If you want full editorial control over your book, and you want to keep all the profits for your book, and you want to have the book look exactly like you want it to look like, and you want to have the cover you want it to look like, and you want it to come out really, really fast, then self-publish. If you want the book to come out in 6 months to a year to 2 years from now, if you want to give up a lot of rights and control of the book, if you don't care what the cover of the book looks like, if you are interested mainly in brand name recognition that a major publisher can bestow upon you, then go to a traditional publisher. And also, if you want to go to a traditional publisher, realize that many of them now want you to fund the creation of the book. You know, they basically say, we want you to buy 5,000 or 10,000 or 20,000 copies of the book at $5 or $10 or $20 a piece. So you're basically funding the creation of your own book. They put their name on it, and if they sell a copy, you get, you know, $1.50 in royalties on that. So we can go more into that if you want, John. Feel free to make an appointment with me, which brings us up to the appointment slide that I referred to before, and that is let's take some action. If anything in this seminar resounded, if you think that there's a way that we should be working together, either for me is ghostwriting your book or coaching you through the book in some way, or just running a bunch of ideas and hiring me as a one-time only, you know, look at this, tell me what you think kind of person, I'm available for that. I love doing it. This is very easy work for me. It's like second nature for me. It's like you know, Bruce Springsteen and the guitar. He picks up a guitar and like, bingo, he knows what he's doing. I pick up a book and bingo, I know what I'm doing. It's a lot of fun. So if you'd like to schedule a free 20-minute What's Holding You Back coaching session with me, just go to this website. There's no obligation. Just go to my schedule app. It's writeyourbookinaflash.com/coaching. And again, we can talk about book coaching, developmental editing, ghostwriting, whatever's on your mind, because I like meeting people. You know, I work out of my home. Yes, granted, I am looking out for a lake, and it is a very nice home, but I don't get out too much. So I like talking to people. So if you want to talk to me about anything, we can talk for 20 minutes, and if it makes sense to talk longer, then we can talk about the arrangements from there. So I want to thank you for attending our session today. I hope you learned a lot, and I hope that we can just have some discussions that take your book to the next level, and that will be a lot of fun. So again, I promised I would not take an hour of your time, and we're about 4 minutes short here. So again, I want to thank you for being here, and if you have any questions, please do make an appointment at writeyourbookinaflash.com/coaching. This is Dan Janelle. Thank you for being here, and I hope to see you in the future. Take care. Bye.